This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. Yes, with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm excellent, Dean. How are you doing?
I am really, really well. I have to say that I had to drive a child to work this morning, and when I got, the whole drive, especially when I got back, I got out of my vehicle and I thought, oh, it really feels like spring this morning.
Is your snow really gone now?
It is, except on the ski hills. The ski hills still have snow. Skiing is expected to go on for another, at least till next weekend. Yeah, for
wow.
sure. Yeah.
That's yep. record breaking for Collingwood, I would think.
It's been a bumper year, and because the temperatures have been hovering here, close to zero at night, and we're at about 5 or 6 degrees right now. It doesn't melt, right? It sticks around, and it's so deep. People forget how deep it is. It can be, in some spots, it can be upwards of a meter deep. That's all been compacted down, so it takes a long time for that to melt away.
Right, you'll be skiing till June.
Yeah.
Well, woo-hoo. I will say here in Prince Edward County, where I'm broadcasting from, it's pretty green. The birds are just a twittering. It's definitely mating and singing time and show off time for the birds. So
indeed,
it's very, very pretty here. Though today is a bit of a gray day.
Is it? Yeah, not here. Blue skies in Collingwood. Of course, I'm in my Collingwood studio, and it is blue skies here. And again, last week we welcomed folks from our newest radio station, Zoomer Radio 92.3 FM CJOS in Owen Sound. So a big hello again to all those folks out there.
And welcome back.
Yeah, we had some listeners. We had somebody call in saying how delightful it was just to be able to turn on the regular radio and listen rather than to go online, which is always an option.
If you're outside, that's right. Outside the broadcasting area, we do, we stream live, so you can hear the show live through the internet.
Indeed. And why don't you might have some announcements. Why don't we, I'll give out the phone numbers though. We would love for you to call in. If you live in Toronto, here's the number, 416-360-0740. But if you live anywhere outside of Toronto, but still within the province of Ontario, it is 1-866-740-4740. That's the number to call. And we would love for you to let our producer Owen know if you are a first-time caller, because then Owen will let me know, and then I will give you these lovely things. We call them the garden wings. Would love to give you those. Our mantra has been the same for many, many years. Call often, call early, and please, one question per call. And that allows us to get everybody in. If you have a second question, you just need to call back. And we have people that do that very nicely.
That's absolutely right. I've got to tell you what's going on outside my window right now.
Please.
There is a couple of birds in a tree that's like 10 feet away. One of them is a blue jay. So the blue jay is holding a peanut in the shell with its feet against the trunk of the tree, and then using its beak to break through the shell to get the peanut out. It's very cute. It takes a while, actually, but my yard is scattered with empty peanut shells, like thousands from a winter of blue jays doing just this, but it's just right there in front of me. I feel like I'm in the middle of, Wild Kingdom or something.
Charlie Dobbin's Wild Kingdom.
There yes, in Prince Edward County.
I was telling you that I spotted my first bright yellow, the American goldfinch. I saw one, and just before I got into the studio this morning, I saw another one. And then when I popped upstairs, I saw a robin bouncing around. And we have the doves and the whole bit. So I haven't seen any blue jays yet, but I've heard them. But I also don't have my peanuts out yet, so I need to get some.
So we find that the blue jays stay around here for the winter. So we have probably a couple of dozen. It's quite a flock. Okay. But as the summer progresses, the blue jays will move north. So they'll go up you know, up to where you are and up, you know, Muskoka way. So we go from having a, you know, a huge flock to a small flock for the summer.
They're one of my more expensive birds to feed.
I was going to say.
The bags of peanuts. And so I'm afraid that I don't always put them out all year round. I let them, I have a sign that says, go to Charlie Dobbin's house.
Yeah, no kidding. And they do.
Yeah, they do.
And it's worth a mortgage, really. It's, it's a lot of money in peanuts. The bird seed store loves us.
Absolutely.
Well, us and our neighbor, because the neighbor kind of competes to see if he can get more blue jays than us. So that's always
fun.
So listen, I do have one announcement coming up. So this is happening tomorrow, Sunday, April 13th at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. It's the Ontario Rock Garden and Hardy Plant Society meeting. They meet during the day. So it's a 1 to 4 p.m. at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. So, you know, for all our new listeners up in Owen Sound, if you're anywhere near Toronto, this is your kind of society, the Hardy Plant Society and, you know, Rock Garden, Ontario Rock Garden. Sean James is doing the speaking. Sean James is brilliant. We've had him on the show before. He is such a well-rounded, he's a horticulturalist, but he's really a naturalist. He knows so much about everything. Like, I can send him a picture of the most obscure insect that I find in my garden, and he'll go, oh, that's a blah, 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 like within, you know, 30 seconds. So he's very, very clever. So worth dropping into the Toronto Botanical Gardens to hear Sean James. He's speaking on xeriscaping, the necessary wave of the future. Okay, go ahead.
What did you call it again? What
scaping? Go ahead, ask me. Xeriscaping with an X, X-E-R. Oh, okay. And so what is xeriscaping? It is it's a form of landscaping that is designed, and landscape design, which is designed to mitigate the reality of a changing climate, and that being a drier climate. So Xerox?
Yep.
That's from the Greek dry. And so xeriscaping is the same idea. So it's scaping for dry. So it's we can talk more about it. And of course, like I said, Sean will have lots to say as well. But Owen, who is studying to be a firefighter, this is like right up, this is exactly what's happening, right? We've got a drier world, less precipitation, or when we do get precipitation, it's extreme. And then we've got all the dryness in between. So we've got lots of issues with forest fires and prairie fires and all that sort of thing. And so this is designing your garden to be able to handle less water, basically.
Gotcha. Okay.
And grow beautifully, right? Have a beautiful garden.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, lots to talk about. Okay. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go to our first break because we do have some callers on the line, but we're at that time now. So again, the numbers to call 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We will be right back with much more here on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio and excitement. I love this time of year because everything is coming up. And you'll recall a couple of years ago through you, I got a whole bunch of alliums and they're coming up again. They're all popping up all over the place. Very exciting.
Oh, that's cool. And of course, they don't even flower till June. So it'd be interesting. Anybody who's listening who wants to tell us what bulbs are up in their garden, I'd love to hear. Because even where I live, I have crocuses flowering, little crocuses and little galanthus or snowdrops. But my tulips and daffodils are all pure green at this point. There's no flowers. And yet I can drive 20 minutes from here down near where Owen's dad lives in Consicon area. And all the daffodils are in full bloom 20 minutes away. Yeah. So you get all these little microclimates. It's so interesting. Yeah.
Well, we're still too far north to have, I think, in our area to have any tulips blooming, but they're certainly popping up. And yes, we've got some crocus as well. So you know what else we've got, Charlie?
What?
We got callers on the line. Let's go to our first one. We have Judy, and she's calling from Brighton. Yeah, that's that area towards you.
My neighbor.
Your neighbor. Yeah. So welcome to the Garden Show, Judy.
Hi. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Morning.
Morning.
Good. How are you?
Good. Charlie, I have an asparagus patch, and I've had a couple of men that have had patches for years tell me that what I should be doing this right now is I should be cutting it all right back to the ground. And then I should be giving it a till of about an inch and a half across the whole patch, putting compost on it, and then leaving it. Is that what I should be doing?
So that's tilling around the patch, I assume.
No.
Not across.
They're telling, they're telling me to take about an inch, because that's what I wondered too. No, and they said no. I need to take my tiller, set it to about an inch depth, and go right across the whole patch. And then, and I said, but isn't the asparagus right at the top of the ground? And and they said, don't worry about it. You'll still get lots. Just till across, and then put some manure on it, and you'll have a crop.
So how long has the patch been there?
Oh, frig, 100 years.
Oh, long, long. Yeah, you know what? It probably does make sense then. Because when you plant asparagus, obviously it's, you've got happy asparagus. So they like a really sunny, really well-drained soil. But when we plant asparagus, they're little roots, basically. And we plant them quite deep. So they're not, the roots are not at the surface. The roots, if they were planted properly, like it, we trench them down six to 12 inches deep. So that's when they're first planted. And then, of course, the first few years, there's not a lot of harvesting. We just want them to grow. And as you point out, the big ferns grow at the end of the season, which is probably what happened for you. So big green ferny growth that all falls over in the winter. So, of course, what do you do now? Well, they are heavy feeders. So that's why your neighbors are probably right. I haven't grown I've read more about asparagus and eaten more asparagus than I've grown. So it's kind of a good idea, actually. What you would do is you're going to take all those ferns away, because they're going to be in the way of what you're trying to do. And then if you do that light tilling across, that's going to break up old soil and open up the old compacted soil and allow fresh manure, a nice layer, to get dropped down on top. And that'll percolate down around the spears that will be coming up, but they're well below that inch. So your timing will be important. You'll probably want to get into that as soon as you can, though. It's a bit damp right now, maybe tomorrow, depending how good your drainage is, or within the next couple of days, I would get that done, just so you're not slicing off the tops of the little spears as they're coming up.
Yeah, and that's the roots seem to be, like I said, we've been in the house for 40 years, and it was well established when we got here. So it's, we have an uncle come and try to take a chunk to start his own bed, and he dug down at least 2 feet and still did not get enough root for it to grow.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. So that's why running through with the tiller will not kill any plants.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks for the call there, Judy. Wow. Yeah, I am looking forward to asparagus. It is something that grows very, very close by, and I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have another Jay on the line. We have Jennifer, and she's calling from Guelph. And Jennifer, I have it on good authority that although you are a second-time caller, apparently for some reason, unbeknownst to us, you didn't get your garden wings the first time.
That's correct.
Okay, well, here we go.
Welcome back, Jennifer.
Get paid in full. There we go.
Thank you. The question I have this morning is about soil composition. When it comes to growing my herbs and my radishes, I think the soil I am using is too, for lack of a better word, too dense. Am I correct in thinking that herbs and things like that, they need more sand in the soil or a lighter texture? Should I be maybe adding some sand to it or some perlite or something?
So this is in ground, obviously. We're not talking containers.
That's right. Some of them are containers. Yeah, no.
Okay. First off, containers should never have garden soil in them. Containers, of course, we fill with potting mix or container growing mix. So you shouldn't have issues with the heaviness of soil in a container. You really want it. I mean, depending on the size of the container, sometimes we'll mix up a little triple mix with our compost, with our potting mix. But either way, container gardens are very different kind of a soil situation than in ground. Now, I've gardened in Guelph before, and I know it's very fertile, but it's also very clay-based soil. So it's slow to drain, which tells you there's quite a bit of clay. And you're right. It's if you're really interested, the clay particles are tiny, the smallest of all the particles that make up soil. And soil is made up of many things, but clay is so tiny that those little tiny particles sit close to each other. They provide what becomes a compacted soil, so the water doesn't drain through as we would like. And the roots of herbs and plants do not get the air that they need in order to thrive. What we do to fix any soil, and yes, I would definitely supplement where you are growing in ground. We can supplement with, in your case, sand is not a bad idea, but make sure it's a really gravelly sand, not like a play sand, a play box sand, because that's too fine. You need chunky sand. I've even been known to put like literally a bag of gravel into my heavy clay soil, but that will sink. All those heavy things will sink. So then you'll be back with all that clay on the surface again. What works the best for any soil is organic matter. Organic matter will help break up your fine particle clay soil and help with drainage. And organic matter will also retain water in a sandy soil and help plants grow. So organic matter is your magical answer for improving all soils. And you're going to get organic matter from a local farm or in bags at the garden center, composted manure or homemade compost or any, you know, any way you want to get some organic stuff in there. It could be straw. It could be shredded newspapers. There's lots of leaves, all kinds of ways to get organics into our soils. But that's what I would do as a priority.
Okie doke. Okay.
The soil I have been using is the it's called Moisture Lock Miracle Grow soil. It's not like soil that's in the ground. That's
good.
I've been using bag soil.
Right. So the moisture lock is designed to hold a lot of moisture, and that's in your containers. So most herbs want a very well-drained soil, like the parsleys, the basils, the rosemaries. They want to be in something that gets wet and then gets really dry. So the moisture retaining soil is good in really sunny locations with plants that want to be their moisture maintained consistently. So feel free to mix up your container mixes and don't necessarily get another moisture lock one. Just get a basic potting mix from this point to mix.
Okay, thanks very much for the call there, Jennifer. We have to run to our next break, but when we return, we'll have much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And welcome back to The Garden Show here on Zoomer Radio. And I've noticed already, Charlie, that we are, we're talking dirty on the show.
I know. That was my point.
We're talking dirty on The Garden Show.
Let's get down. Let's get dirty.
And I think we might have another caller on the line that wants to talk dirty. We're going to Etobicoke. We have Michael. Welcome to The Garden Show, Michael.
Morning. Yes, I was smiling to myself as I'm listening here. I said, I thought I had a unique question, but I have a slightly different perspective on it. So when we're talking about soil prep in the spring and planting, replanting, I'm really speaking about existing ornamental gardens. And, of course, it's very hard to incorporate new material with existing beds without, you know, really basically destroying root structure and or the actual plants. So the question is, how important is it to try to blend it, incorporate it, like in ornamental gardens with deciduous and coniferous shrubs and so
great.
On?
Great question.
And it's not a sneak second question, but related to that is theories on soil tilling. I'm talking like commercially, like at large on farms, but even as it would apply to you in your home with regards to techniques of it being bad for the environment. Do you know what I'm talking about, Charlie?
Absolutely.
Speak to all of that, please, and kind of expand on the topic of soil prep. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Good, very good question. So right off the top, when you have existing gardens, you definitely don't want to get in there and start digging to incorporate fresh material. And as you point out, you do want to get fresh material in there because the soil does get depleted of its nutrients and its structure. Everything starts to be become poorer in quality over time as the plants use the nutrients, and the soil will slowly but surely compost or disappear, and so your garden levels drop. So yes, you want to add. What I do, the two things. Number one is I wouldn't try and dig into an ornamental garden whatsoever. Whatever I'm adding, I would add to the surface. My favorite thing to add is leaves in the fall. Chopped up maple leaves, whatever leaves, not oak preferably, not walnut preferably, but not piles and piles of pine needles, but anything that's dropped out of your trees that you can mow up into the bag and pour onto your ornamental garden beds in the fall, 2 to 4 inches deep, will very naturally disappear. And it's amazing because you've got life in that soil, the worms, the sow bugs, all those little critters, they pull that material down under the surface. You don't have to dig at all. You just sit back, pour yourself a martini and watch it happen. You don't have to do anything.
So, a dirty martini.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, in order to be consistent there, make sure it's dirty. So that's how I deal with ornamental beds. I've also, if I didn't have access to a ton of leaves, when I lived in Richmond Hill, there was a place up in Stouffville, and there's lots of places that supply all kinds of soil and soil amendments in the 1 cubic liter bags, or 1 cubic yard bags.
Right.
So in the suburban and urban world, you're not going to bring 10 yards of soil in and dump it on your front lawn. That's just too much. But a 1 yard bag is a pretty nice size, and you can work away at just putting that on the surface of your gardens, take it over with a wheelbarrow, throw it in with your hands or shovel or little pails, just get it in there and let it sit. And I used to get something that was called, I think it was called duck compost, and it came from a duck farm. Huh. It was the bedding from the ducks that they had composted. So it was wood shavings that had been composted. So they didn't smell bad. They kind of looked a bit like kitty litter. But I would spread that on my gardens, like an inch or so of that on all my gardens. And again, it would just disappear within a few weeks. So it was just gone and added great nutrient and organic matter. Right. In terms of the bigger picture, the tilling question, rototilling for the home gardener has become completely not appropriate, though there are people that have done it for their entire lives and their parents did it, their grandparents did it. So they do it and they just will continue to do it, but it's not the best way to prepare your soil. Any kind of tilling, whether it's rototilling or the big, the big tractors with the tillers on them, does affect, and often in a negative way, the structure and texture of soil. So when we want to grow plants, we need soil that will allow certain things to happen. It will allow air to get down to the roots, allow water to get down to the roots, and allow life to thrive, not just plant life, but animal life and tiny, tiny little microorganisms. Tilling does not encourage that. So it's really not a good idea. There's not a lot you really have to do. Like, we tend to make more work than we have to. If you just leave your soil alone, just every year add that half inch, 1 inch of organic material on the surface, your soil will look after itself. And it's not overnight. Like my Richmond Hill clay soil took 20 years to make it amazing, but every year it was a little better. And by 20 years later, it was gorgeous. So, and my neighbors were also jealous, but it wasn't gorgeous the first year. It just was a process, and plants got happier and digging and transplanting got easier.
Fabulous. Thanks very much for the call there, Michael. We're going to jump right into our next caller. We have Eddie, who's calling from Buffalo, New York, and he is a first-time caller. Welcome to the Garden Show, Eddie.
Thank you so much.
Eddie, I'm going to give you the garden wings, okay, there, sir? We love the fact that you're a first-time caller.
That's what I was waiting for. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I have a beautiful amaryllis that just bloomed. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely gorgeous. But I want to know, what's the best way to keep the flower to last the longest, so before it wilts?
Ah, so it's blooming.
Oh, I even know the answer to that.
Well, first, let me just ask, is it blooming right now?
It is. It's fully open just as of this morning.
Oh, sweet. Okay, so Dean, what would you do?
If you want it to last longer, and I've learned this from Charlie Dobbin, you cut it off and you put it in water.
The whole stem?
Yeah, yeah. As long as you want to make it. Depends on your vase, right? If you've got a nice, narrow, tall vase, and you can put, you know, a 1 foot stem into that vase with the flower on top, it's stunning.
Okay.
To really prolong any flowers, any cut flowers or any flowers at all, the cooler the ambient temperatures, the better. So turn your furnace down so you're not too tropical in your house. Keep it out of full sun. Keep it in a bright spot, but not right in a window. And I would change that water every couple of days. And you don't need much water. Just put in like an inch or two of water. And then, every couple of days, dump out the water, fresh water, little clip, take off an inch on the bottom of the stem, and then back in.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so that'll be better than leaving it in the pot.
Yes, it actually, you will enjoy the flower for longer if you remove it from the plant.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. After it's all done, I can just let it do its thing.
Exactly. Then you got to let the bulb leaves grow. But in the meantime, take a picture and send it to me.
I will, definitely.
Okay. Great.
Thank you so much.
Charlie's
going to give it.
Thanks very much there, Eddie. Yeah, Charlie's email is c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Okay, Charlie, before we go on to our next caller, I have an email that came through. Susan, who lives in the Collingwood area, okay? So Susan has a basement window, which also front entrance to the house. It only gets a very short period of sun in the morning. And she's looking for a flowering perennial that will flourish, but not get too high. She doesn't want to go hydrangea because she's already got too many on the property. It's also sort of like a bedroom window there. So she's looking something that will show, but again, only gets like a brief morning period of sun.
So I have that exact same thing at my house. I have a raised basement. So the windows are looking across the ground, basically.
Yes.
And, I didn't want to, exactly like she said, plant a bunch of stuff and then darken the basement rooms. They are bedrooms. I wanted to maintain brightness, but then I want a nice something out there. So a couple of things. One is whatever you're planting, make sure it's not directly under the overhang from your roof so that you're out probably 2 or 3 feet off the foundation with your garden. So that right away does provide air and light to get into the basement. The other thing is look at plants that are low growing, good looking, right away I think of hostas because there are many sizes, right, from miniature hostas to massive hostas, but come up with a color combination of hostas that are the kind of size you're looking for. And the nice thing about that is that it'll be wide open in the winter, so you have maximum light coming in the winter, and you'll have that nice foliage that you'll look out on through those windows in the summer. So that's kind of a no-brainer. One of my favorites that's coming up right now are the hellebores. So H-E-L-L-E, B as in Bob, O-R-E is a hellebore, also known as a Lenten rose or a Christmas rose. So we're in Lent right now, and they are blooming as we speak. So they are early spring bloomers, and they're evergreen. So they're low again to the ground, maybe a foot tall. Love the shade, bloom early, and have green leaves year round. So you don't have to do anything. You just enjoy them. You don't need to prune or do anything at all. You will need to do a little winter protection where you are. So kicking up a bit of extra soil around and under the leaves of the plant in the fall will help the crown survive the winters. But then again, you guys get consistent snow, so you're probably fine anyway.
Okay, beautiful. And that, again, was Susan in the Collingwood area there. Great. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Lauren on the line, and she is calling from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Lauren.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I had heard that if you put coffee grounds around your garden, it can chase away mosquitoes. Is there any truth to that? Or
I wish it was that easy. No, not really. I mean, okay, so here, maybe the theory would be, okay, coffee grounds are always good. Again, that's that organic matter we're always talking about. So yes, nothing wrong with coffee grounds. Coffee grounds are usually pretty chunky, so they contribute to drainage. And that is a good thing when it comes to lowering the mosquito population, because mosquitoes want standing water to lay their eggs. And it only takes like 2 days for the eggs to hatch and the larva to become adults to fly around and want to suck your blood. So anything you can do to contribute to not having standing water will lower your mosquito population. So I guess there's kind of that aspect, but otherwise, no, I don't think mosquitoes would really care if it was coffee grounds or bark mulch or whatever you put out there. Even, you know, the citronella, we were talking about plants a couple of weeks ago that will help discourage mosquitoes, but even those are passive. They don't do anything until you go out and start rubbing the leaves to, right. You know, let exude the aroma of the citronella or whatever. Then you've got a bit of a thing going on to keep mosquitoes down. But otherwise, yeah, from a mosquito's perspective, wind is one of the best ways to keep them down. Yeah, they are very weak flyers. If you can get a fan or be out in your patio where there's a nice breeze, you won't be bothered by mosquitoes.
Coffee grounds just give them a morning buzz. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
So it's a drainage issue then. Okay, thanks so much.
It could be, yeah. That's why coffee grounds I could see being quite effective.
Okay. I saved my coffee grounds. Yep.
Okay.
Thanks very much there.
Okay.
Thanks, Lauren.
Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know what? I save all my coffee grounds, and sometimes because I haven't always been able to put them in a composter, I just scatter them all over the lawn. I figure that, you know, it's not going to hurt it. I sow them. At the very worst, I'll get coffee growing on my property.
You know? No, you won't. But just make sure you're not dropping big clumps of white coffee grounds. Okay. If you're doing the broadcasting.
Yeah, doing the broadcasting.
Yeah, and your kids are growing up enough, they're not out doing somersaults on the lawn anymore. I always tried to avoid those kinds of things when my kids were young. It was because, you know, they're out running around bare feet and doing whatever they're doing on lawns. But definitely you can. It's always better if you're going to add organic material, have it as decomposed as possible. But if for some reason it can't be decomposed, then yes, chopped up small, which coffee grounds usually are, and scattered, either lawn or garden is fine.
Yeah, and I figure being in the business that I am, the broadcasting method is probably the best for me.
You're right. Aren't we just the pun master today? Oof.
We're going to go to our next caller. We have Ellie on the line. Ellie is a first-time caller from Aurora. Welcome to the Garden Show. Ellie?
Thank you very much for taking my call.
I want to give you your garden wings, okay? Look at that. I am just a busy guy this morning. Yeah. I'm loving this.
Good morning. Welcome.
What do you got there, Ellie?
I have a grapefruit tree, and I put it outside every, June, July, August, and then take it back in. But it's in the house right now, and it's about, I would say, 70 years old, and it just looks really sad. The first year, the leaves are drying off. It just looks really sad.
Okay. All right. Well, you have taken on a rather challenging plant. The requirements for the citrus plants is very, very specific, and our homes rarely provide what they want. Way, way back in Victorian times, when before international trade existed, and then, of course, that doesn't exist anymore either, there were things called orangeries. The really rich people had an orangery, so estates and Buckingham Palace and places like that. And the orangery was a greenhouse specifically designed to grow citrus fruit, like oranges and lemons and grapefruits. So it had the perfect conditions. It was a glass house, so it was bright sun, particularly all winter. It was very, very bright. It was cool in the winter, so it wasn't hot, tropical winter temperatures. It was very cool and very bright. And the water was, they were watered sparingly in the winter, just enough to keep them alive. And as spring came along, they would pop it with all kinds of flowers because they smell great. And they all start flowering like crazy in late winter. And then the fruit would form. So, of course, then we got into more traditional growing with, you know, warmer temperatures, more consistent water, fertilizer, etc. And all these plants were grown in big pots like you probably have yours. So that's in order to really be successful and have a happy plant. you want to avoid, you know, it's got to be high moisture, like not a sauna kind of moisture, but it's the humidity in the winter in our homes that will kill most tropical plants, or lack of humidity. So the dry, dry air coming off the furnace is not good for most plants. So that's probably what has contributed to it looking a bit sad right now. And then as we get into spring and summer, it'll probably be a lot happier because it's going to love being outside.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for the...
Yep. I never had any trouble with this plant for years. Okay. I've been keeping this plant for years. Nothing really has changed, I don't think.
Right. Okay, but so what could have changed, just to quickly give you a suggestion here, one is if we leave the same plant in the same pot for years and years and years, the plant does become pot-bound at some point. So it could be that you're needing to actually... repot that plant. The other is inspect. Look really, really closely. You could have mites. Spider mites love dry environments and they love citrus plants. So you won't see the mites. They're too small. But if you see any webbing on that plant, that will tell you what's going on. And if so, you've got to deal with the spider mites. So do a really close inspection. Scale insects also can devastate citrus plants. So just get out your magnifying glass and get to work. Double check everything's in good condition and otherwise consider repotting.
Fabulous. Thanks. Might be the problem. Okay. There we
might,
are.
Mites.
Oh, might.
There's no such thing as one mite. They're all one mites.
Mites be the problem.
One mite? Well, maybe.
Maybe. Okay. We're going to go to our next break. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show, and yes, a busy spring morning show.
It is. Boy, yeah. I'm earning my money today.
Yeah, it's the season. Once again, that email, if you want to send Charlie like a photograph, that type of thing, if a picture speaks 1,000 words kind of deal, c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Okay, numbers to call once again are 416-360-0740 or toll free anywhere outside Toronto, 1-866-740-4740. Let's go to Fran. She's calling from Oakville. Welcome to The Garden Show, Fran.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Excellent. What's going on at your place?
Oh, I'd like to know what to do with caladium bulbs. Can I plant it indoors now?
Are they ones you bought them this year, or are they from past years?
Yeah, I got it this year.
Okay, so caladiums are beautiful. I'm not sure if Dean knows what they look like. They're big heart-shaped leaves with multicolors. So they're super ornamental. We don't grow them for flowers. We grow them for leaves. Mm. Okay, so are they still very dormant right now in the package you bought them in, or are you seeing some growth?
No, they're kind of dry, and they look good. Yeah,
they're
firm.
All right, so... it's the middle of April. I probably would plant them now or within the next 2 weeks. Uh-huh. You're in Oakville. So you're usually frost free by the third week of May, and you're going to want to get them outside once it's warm. This is a tropical plant that wants warm temperatures. So you're going to be going outside with them in early June, and you want them to be, if you have a nice bright spot to grow them indoors, assuming you've got a south window or grow lights, something to really support the growth once they get going, then that's where you will have them until they go out. And when they go out, you won't go directly into the sun. You'll go into a partial sun, partial shade situation. Yeah. So, depending on what you've got indoors, if you've got a bright spot, I'd get them into pots, well-drained potting mix, and, get them going, get them growing so that you'll actually have something beautiful to put out as soon as you can in early June.
Yeah. How deep do I plant the bulb?
The top of the bulb should be about 2 inches below the surface of the soil.
Okay. All right.
And are you going into the ground with those or going into containers?
No, I'll keep them in the pot, in a pot. I'll take them from a small pot to maybe a bigger pot.
Yeah, exactly. Start in a small pot now. Okay. Yeah. If you've got three or four of them, you can put them all together. Just don't put them in a huge big pot. Put them in, 6-inch, 8-inch kind of pot. Yeah, and, yeah. and get them growing. And then when you get outside, you can separate them and plant them very carefully where you want them for the summer.
Okay.
Thanks very much for the call there, Fran. Good luck.
Thank you.
Keep us updated.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go right to our next caller in Scarborough. We have Camille on the phone. Welcome to the Garden Show, Camille.
Oh, hi, Barry. Thank you for taking the call. I have three boxwoods that are approximately 30 years old, so they've really, you know, done their best for me. And, of course, last year they got the boxwood moss, and I'm trying to replace them. I face south. There is a birch tree on the lawn, and there's a small ginkgo biloba on the boulevard. But they do get sun, you know, and these have thrived, again, for 30 years. So I need something that grows small like that, round like that, preferably all winter. It's not a soggy area. It's like it's a lawn that's like up, so it's not, you know, wet. So I'm just trying to think of something that's, you know, you could recommend. I know the little gem series, but the other question is, where do I get these? Like, I mean, last fall I went looking and they said, oh, no, we've sold out of this. And it's like, oh, my gosh. Like, so
but,
what do I do?
Yeah, but those, excuse me, but the little gems are boxwoods as far as I know. Yeah, they stay tiny. There was many people replacing boxwood with boxwood, which I would not recommend because it's just going to be a full-time job, basically, trying to keep your boxwood nice and healthy. As you recognize, the boxwood tree moth is devastating all the boxwoods. I'd go with you, so Y-E-W, if you're prepared to do some pruning because they do grow. There's some stay, you know, you can shape a U any way you want. You can keep it as a globe. You can make it a pyramid. You can, some of them grow in different kind of forms. Some grow wider, some grow taller. They're often used for hedging. But so a U is an easy plant that we know will thrive, but it will require some pruning. So you could go that route. But I'm a bit of a tendency to like the what are called the ilex, I-L-E-X, or the holly plants. There are many different kinds of hollies, many of which will fulfill your needs and be pretty low maintenance. They do handle fairly low light. The ones I planted here in my garden are called inkberry, so they get little black berries on them. They look like boxwood. You can trim them like a boxwood, but there's no insects that eat them. They're very, very hardy. At my brother's place, I can't remember, I'd have to look it up, he's got a real shady spot where nothing was growing, and I put in a couple of female hollies and one male holly, and they're beautiful. They're deciduous. They drop their leaves in the winter. But boy, the females are covered in berries all winter. And then, of course, they all pop out in leaves in the next little while. So it's and very little maintenance required. They don't grow fast. They're small little leaves like you're familiar with from the boxwood.
Thanks very much for the question there, Camille. Good luck on that. We have to go to our next break, but I'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show, and we do have one more caller on the line. However, Charlie, I have one more email question that has come through from a listener who's relatively new, and I got a kick out of one of the details. It's Melanie from Rochester, apparently, and we were talking about rototilling today, and believe it or not, her dog's name is Tiller. So I thought, that's craziness. Okay, so she has dinner plate hibiscus, okay? She apparently has a dead wood pile of about 3 feet high and 4 feet in diameter. And she wants to know if she has to cut them back, how far she should cut them back.
Okay. Dinner plate hibiscus are herbaceous perennial. So this is the hibiscus story. We have tropical hibiscus that are growing inside our homes with, you know, two trumpet flowers, red, pink, yellow. Those are tropical. We have shrubs called Rose of Sharon, which are hardy, and they are hibiscus, and they're outside, and they will bloom next August and September. Then there's a third kind of hibiscus, which is a herbaceous perennial. So this is a plant that grows goes to sleep every winter. So there's nothing, should be nothing above ground. Everything should have died down. The root is alive. The plant is very slow to get going in the spring. So everything else is up, but that plant is not up and you're sure it's dead. And then all of a sudden it pops up and then it grows like stink and puts out flowers that are the size of your head. Like,
wow,
huge flowers at the end of the summer. And so really, really showy, like a showstopper, you know, talk about curb appeal on your house. Put in a couple of those near the front and everybody will stop and say, what is that? So I'm surprised she's saying, what should I do with it? It should have all dropped down. If it's a hibiscus, like a dinner plate hibiscus, then it should have all dropped down. If it hasn't dropped down, it should be all at least dried up. So I would just stake it so you know where it is. You don't step there. It's going to be a while before you see it, but cut off everything that is above ground that's dead, basically.
Okay, cool. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Mary in Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary.
Good morning to both of you. Just a quick thing. The Farmer's Almanac, I read this late last summer, and someone else told me this, so I'm not sure. Didn't get a chance to do it. What it says is, get the Irish Spring original soap, break it up, and put it in your garden. Mm-hmm. And squirrels hate the smell of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a two-point question. I want to do it now because my tulips are showing, but no, right, you know, just the leaves. Right. My daffodils, unfortunately, aren't coming up. I think the squirrels got them, even though they hate them. But mm-hmm. what I'm wondering is, if we get, I mean, I don't mind buying it. It's not that expensive. Go to the Dollarama. But the thing is, if we get off and on rain like we normally do, and I've got the Irish Spring scattered around certain parts of my garden, is the soap suds or the soap harmful to the ground?
No. No, no, not at all. It might look a bit funny. I mean, you might get kind of a bubble, little yeah. blobs of bubbles in your garden, and people are going to go, what is that? Yeah. Maybe. You might not. It might just kind of, it'll dissolve. There's no question. Those.
So well, I'm worried it won't harm the soil, like when it goes down into the soil.
No, it's just going to wash everything. You're going to have the cleanest soil around.
Cleanest dirty soil.
And you know what? Bottom line, it doesn't have to be Irish Spring soap. Squirrels, you're right. The almanac is right. They do not like strong odors. So there's no question. There's different ways to try and put out smelly things. I mean, you can sprinkle cinnamon around. But again, this will get washed out by the rains. You'll have to replace. Yeah. Cloves are very smelly, you know, particularly, you know, unground cloves.
Really? Okay.
Spread those around your plants that the squirrels are bothering. Even something crazy like peppermint oil. Dip cotton balls in peppermint oil and then put the little cotton balls around the plants that the squirrels are going after. They will not touch them because it's such, the odor of the peppermint oil will freak them out. So odors, you're absolutely right. Irish Spring isn't the only odoriferous thing, though. So think about some of the other things that could potentially help.
I like the peppermint oil with the balls. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad I thought of calling. Good.
I'm glad you called, too.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks so much for the call there, Mary. And look at that. Here we are.
We're almost out of time.
Yeah, just over a minute ago.
My. So.
What are you doing today?
Nobody's made fun of Owen and the fact that we're now happy to share the show with our friends in Owen Sound. So I have to mention that. I'm not going outside today. Nope. Today is damp and gray and cool. Tomorrow is definitely an outdoor day for me.
Okay.
I'm doing my least favorite thing. I am doing accounting today.
Oh, yeah. I have a little bit of accounting to do. Yeah. So, tax time is upon us.
Exactly. But I am enjoying through my window watching all the bird action. I have a heron that goes over every day at the same time. And it goes in really low. Like it's literally just almost touches my roof as it goes over. So it's really cool. It's a big, great blue heron.
That is great.
And it just goes. So they have a rookery. They live over in one side of my house, but they spend the day, I guess, in the bay fishing for fish because that's what they do.
Yeah.
So, beautiful. Thank you, Dean. Been fun.
Yeah.
Keep those puns coming. Thank you, Owen. Well,
comes with being a dad. That's all good.
I guess. Bad dad jokes. Thanks, Owen. Couldn't do any of this without you or the great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.